This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. With presidential politics overtaking much of the news media cycle, it's easy to miss other important stories that go unnoticed. One of those stories deals with the ongoing admittance of Syrian refugees. The Obama administration has disregarded a warning from FBI Director James Comey that we cannot properly vet the Syrian refugees hoping to enter the country. The latest numbers suggest that the administration is taking in new Syrian refugees at an accelerated pace. Member of the House Freedom Caucus and representative from the 1st Congressional District of Oklahoma, Jim Bridenstine, joined Tony on Wednesday to talk about it.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's always good to be here.
Well, good to hear from you, Congressman. You have been pretty vocal about this issue as a Navy veteran, concerned about the issue of national security and what these poorly vetted refugees could mean to national security. How committed is the Freedom Caucus to slowing this process down?
Well, I think the Freedom Caucus is very committed. I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes to most members of Congress on the Republican side, for sure, want to make sure that the folks that are actually coming here are properly vetted. As you mentioned, James Comey testified before Congress, and he explicitly said that there's not a good process to vet these folks, primarily because they're not documented. They don't have any papers. We don't know where they're from. We don't know what their associations are. It's very difficult to vet somebody who really we don't have any background on. So all that being said, what we're up against now is the government shutdown that looms at the end of September unless we pass some spending bills. Well, normally the way this works is we do a series of appropriation bills. There are 12 of them, and I've talked about this on your show before. And we do those bills one at a time. And in those bills, that's where we have the opportunity to represent our constituents. We can defund things. We can fund things that we think are appropriate. We can move money around. We have the ability to represent our constituents, and we have the ability to actually put limitations on the executive branch using the power of the purse, which is enshrined in the Constitution. So that is why we should normally, that's why we do 12 appropriation bills in regular order, representing our constituents in an open amendment process. As everybody knows, this whole system gets shut down every year. I'm now in my fourth year in Congress, and it was going on before I got here. Every year, Harry Reid shuts down the process in the Senate. He won't pass any bills, zero. So we're faced with yet another government shutdown. Somehow they always call it a Republican shutdown. But now, even though we're the only ones that have done anything to fund the government, but this year, with this government shutdown looming, we're going to do a massive CR where they roll all 12 bills into one massive spending package, and you say, we're going to fund next year exactly as we funded last year. You take off the table the power of the purse. You take off the table my representation of my constituents. You either fund everything or the whole government shuts down. Those are your two options. And if you fund everything, guess what? You're funding, as you correctly identified, the Syrian refugee resettlement program, which the FBI director has said we don't have the tools necessary to properly vet the Syrian refugees that are coming here. This is why the process matters. We have a breakdown in the process here. And when we as Republicans step out and vote for CR, we're enabling the president to advance his agenda. I want to be really clear about the Syrian refugee resettlement program. This is an immigration program. Make no mistake. These are not temporary refugees that are going to eventually go home. By refugee status, you get a green card in a year. And in 5 years, you're going to have your United States citizenship. This is another tool, and the president, this is not unique. The president uses refugee status regularly to increase immigration in ways that he deems as appropriate. And whether or not you agree with the program or not, the bottom line is we have a constitution, and the constitution says that Congress has the authority to create an uniform rule of naturalization. The president doesn't get to do this by himself. So in my estimation, this is an area where Congress needs to assert its constitutional role of having the power of the purse and say, look, we're going to defund this particular program, or we're going to fund a program that guarantees that there is a certification process so we know whoever comes here is not going to be hostile to the United States, which right now is seemingly lacking. So this is, I think, an important point. At the end of this month, we're all going to step out and vote up or down on a massive continuing resolution. And, Tony, this is the other thing that is important for your audience to understand, and I know they do because they listen to this program. When we fund a CR, you're not just funding the Syrian refugee resettlement program. You're funding Planned Parenthood.
Right.
You're funding Obamacare. You're funding all of the EPA rules and regulations that everybody is understanding now is damaging the American economy, especially the economy in my state of Oklahoma, and I know your state of Louisiana. You talk about we're funding sanctuary cities. We're funding a whole host of things that are antithetical to the people that are listening to this show right now, and we're doing it because we get an up or down vote. You either fund the entire federal government or the entire federal government shuts down.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Congressman Jim Bridenstine, my guest, we're talking about it's called a CR, Continuing Resolution. That's how the government, when was the last time that the actual appropriations process worked and that they actually passed appropriation bills?
Okay, so this is an important point, and we hear this from people all the time. They say things like, well, the last time the appropriations process really worked was in 1970, whatever. Here's the difference. Historically, we have done CRs before the Obama administration. There were, in fact, continuing resolutions before the Obama administration. But they were for one appropriation bill for a period of 2 or 3 months so that your member of Congress could come back and eventually pass
right.
an appropriation bill where you could be represented. That's the difference. What we're doing now under the Obama administration is we're doing not one appropriation bill, we're doing all 12 of them at the same time. And we're not doing it, you know, for a period of a month or two so that we can represent you. We're doing it for an entire year, my first couple of years in Congress, and now we're doing it to where it is even worse, it expires in a lame duck, so then they can come back and increase federal spending, which is what they did to us last year. And
but the point,
I want to be clear, Tony, this is not Republicans against Democrats. That's not what this is. This is collusion. Both parties are doing this. Both parties are doing this, and it needs to stop. And there can be, we can't make any more excuses. We can't apologize for it. Republicans need to say, no, Harry Reid, you don't get your way this year. We're not going to have a CR that expires in December so you can turn around and not only fund Planned Parenthood and fund the Syrian Refugee Resettlement Program and fund Obamacare, which also does abortion, and fund sanctuary cities and fund the EPA regulations. We're not going to do all that. But on top of it, the reason it expires on December 9th is because I guarantee you they're planning to spend more money.
You can find out more about Representative Bridenstine when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, we'll be joined by Congressman Tom Cotton. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
On June 27th, in a 5-3 decision, the Supreme Court struck down a basic, common-sense law that would have required abortion facilities to be held to the same standard as ambulatory surgical centers, and that abortionists have admitting privileges at a local hospital. Despite this setback, there are many pieces of legislation currently being offered that will protect unborn children and their mothers. For questions and answers on this Supreme Court decision, and for hopeful pro-life signs in the culture, visit frc.org/womenshealth.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. There have been allegations surrounding the ongoing activities of the Clinton Foundation for decades. Now the only question is whether the group will actually be investigated. The latest allegations against the foundation have been dubbed pay-to-play, which alludes to accusations of the State Department giving special access to Secretary Clinton for Clinton Foundation donors. Senator Tom Cotton believes these allegations need to be cleared up before the November election. What does the senator have planned? Member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, joined Tony on Thursday.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's great to be back on with you, as always.
You're from Arkansas. You're very familiar with the Clinton family and the political operation they have going there. What concerns you most about these allegations that she may have been engaged in what's called pay-to-play or play-to-pay?
Well, Tony, you're right that we in Arkansas are not too surprised to know that the Clintons are yet again facing pay-to-play allegations. I have long said that the email controversy and the foundation controversy are not two separate controversies. I think they are intimately linked because I suspect one of the main reasons Hillary Clinton wanted to set up a private email server to conduct official business is because the business of the Clinton Foundation and the State Department was intertwined. This was the main issue at her confirmation hearing in 2009. It was also such an important issue to Barack Obama's senior advisors that they had to sign a memorandum of understanding between the West Wing of the White House and the Clinton Foundation to police conflicts of interest. And it would appear that the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton violated that memorandum with the White House, at least in spirit, if not in the letter, by acting as essentially a concierge service for the Clinton Foundation. You know, if you made a big donation to the Clinton Foundation, you got direct access to Hillary Clinton or some of her senior advisors and appointees. That's not the kind of thing that your listeners could get.
I mean, that obviously is activity that would be unlawful and would require action. Who has the responsibility now that this information is out there that would suggest, and we're just saying that it looks very suspicious, who has the responsibility to follow up on that?
Well, we have a responsibility as Congress to conduct oversight hearings, and I know that Jason Chaffetz in the House of Representatives is moving forward with those hearings. They should be happening this month, so hopefully we can air these allegations and learn exactly what happened before the election. Of course, in the executive branch, the FBI should be able to investigate this. I've heard conflicting reports of whether or not they have an open investigation into the Clinton Foundation or not. I have to say, I have my doubts about their ability to conduct that investigation free of political influence, given the fact that Loretta Lynch met with Bill Clinton on a private aircraft in Arizona just a few days before the FBI cleared Hillary Clinton in the email controversy. But the FBI certainly needs to move forward with an investigation, given the revelations we've seen in recent emails where staffers at the Clinton Foundation and the State Department were communicating repeatedly about securing high-level meetings or briefings with Clinton Foundation donors. I think it's only prudent that they do move forward and that the American people know exactly what the arrangement was between the State Department under Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation before they potentially entrust her not just the State Department, but the entire government as the President of the United States.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, my guest, discussing recently released emails that suggest, and I emphasize suggest, that there could have been a pay-to-play scheme between Hillary Clinton and her foundation. Those wanting to meet with her or her top staff at the State Department when she was Secretary of State made contributions to the Clinton Foundation. Now, Senator, this is no small foundation. As I mentioned, over the course of about 19 years, they've had about $2 billion pass through. But it's interesting. I mean, we're talking in 2013, they raised $262 million. 2015, $223 million. But what was interesting about this in some of the data that I saw is that in 2013, they had 350 employees. Within 2 years, that had ramped up to 2,000. Is there any suggestion or any evidence to suggest that maybe there's a political motive to this foundation?
Well, I mean, I think one of the key parts of the foundation's work is to advance the Clinton family's ambitions. It's to keep Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton in the news. It's to fund their lifestyle, to pay for jet travel and accommodations, and to pay for the retainers for all of the various hangers-on they have. People like Sid Blumenthal, who been operating in the Clinton machine for decades. You know, if you look online, there's a great essay by Walter Russell Mead, a noted scholar and someone is not a rabid Republican, called the first postmodern political machine. And he compares the Clinton Foundation to the old ethnic urban machines of the late 19th century. This driven around family and around fame and around money, not around, a cohesive ethnic group inside of a big city, the way you might have seen with Tammany Hall. I think Walter really nailed it, that the Clinton Foundation, whatever good work it has done, is foremost about advancing the fame and the power of the Clinton family. And that's why you can see, as soon as Hillary Clinton got into office, the number of donations increased, Bill Clinton's speaking fees increased, as you say, the number of employees and donors increased, and why it's so troublesome that Hillary Clinton won't immediately stop, for instance, accepting corporate and foreign donation right now, not waiting till after the election. Why she won't say that she's going to break ties entirely with the foundation if she becomes president of the United States. I mean, obviously, the conflicts just couldn't be more apparent. To have a sitting president associated with a family foundation that has been the recipient of contributions from all kinds of repressive governments and shady oligarchs and political operators.
Senator, are you the only one on the Senate side that has concerns about this, or have some of your colleagues there in the Senate expressed concerns as well?
I may be the one with the deepest experience since I came from Arkansas, but I'm not the only one. Lots of senators, just like lots of congressmen, have expressed these similar concerns, and they want to see public hearings. They want to get to the bottom of this before the election, so the American people understand exactly what Hillary Clinton was up to when she was Secretary of State, which is a pretty good predictor of what she might be up to if we give her even more power and entrust her with the presidency.
Now, as you mentioned, Congressman Chaffetz in the House, they have suggested, they're actually calling for a special prosecutor. They're going to look into this. We've had them on the program. What about the Senate? Can we expect any type of hearings in the Senate to look into this within the next 60 days?
I don't know what the schedule is for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. That would be the most likely committee, since it oversees the State Department, to conduct these hearings. Again, I think it would be appropriate if the House fully airs all of the issues. You know, that'll be effective. But Congress as a whole needs to ensure that we have a thorough and fair and public accounting for exactly the kinds of conflicts of interest that we've been discussing, to ensure that the American people know exactly what Hillary Clinton did as Secretary of State regarding the Clinton Foundation, so they'll know what might happen if she's president.
Now, some senator would say, well, this is just politically motivated. You've got, Republicans calling on, investigation hearings into the Democratic presidential nominee. This is simply partisan politics. But there's something much deeper here, because what this does, in my view, is that it literally shakes the confidence that the American people can have in their government if we have a system that will not at least ask the questions and look into alleged activities that are potentially illegal. I mean, that has a potential of growing and leading to more lawlessness within our society.
Yeah, Tony, this is far from partisan. This is a fundamental question about the rule of law and respecting the rule of law and protecting the American people from undue foreign interference in the conduct of our foreign policy. You know, you've been around government for a long time. It's one thing to meet with key and influential people who are American citizens, who employ a lot of people in your state, or who represent large advocacy groups like yours, Tony. It's another thing to be doing that, though, for foreigners, for foreign businessmen, for these shady oligarchs, or for leaders from repressive governments. I don't think many people who have served in Democratic or Republican White Houses, for instance, would tell you that they would just take a meeting from some foreign businessman or some foreign political leader without running through a careful vetting process at the State Department to ensure that they know exactly who they're meeting with and that their goals are aligned and that they're consistent with stated U.S. policy. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so troublesome that the Clinton Foundation had this backdoor concierge service set up directly through the office of the Secretary of State, and why we need to get to the bottom of exactly what was happening.
To find out more about Congressman Cotton, go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, a look at recent comments from the Secretary of Homeland Security that you might find surprising. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Since September 11th, 2001, America has been at war. And that's about all anyone can say with certainty about a conflict that has cost 7,000 American lives and almost $2 trillion. As long as the most basic strategic questions remain unanswered, victory is impossible. Providing a much-needed dose of clarity, counterterrorism expert Dr. Sebastian Gorka shows the way forward in a recent talk entitled Defeating Jihad, the Winnable War. Watch this troubling but ultimately encouraging event at frc.org/war.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Congress is back in session this week, and some major news items are flying under the radar. The Secretary of Homeland Security made some surprising comments about what could be the administration's plan to take over the election process, stating, quote, "We should carefully consider whether our election system, our election process, is critical infrastructure like the financial sector, like the power grid. There's a vital national interest in our election process, so I do think we need to consider whether it should be considered, by my department and others, critical infrastructure," end quote. How do we protect our election system from the Obama administration? Former presidential candidate and Congresswoman from Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann, joined Tony with that answer.
Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Great to be on your show.
All right, let's start with that definition. What does critical infrastructure mean?
Well, normally, when you're talking about Homeland Security, critical infrastructure means roads, bridges, interchanges, dikes, water reservoirs, the essential elements that government must provide to be able to keep a society functioning. Voting is extremely important. It is foundational to our country, but it does not come under the level of critical infrastructure. Under our Constitution, it's the states and localities that run these elections. And I'll tell you, I don't think that this was just a slip. I don't think that this was something that the Secretary of Homeland Security just brought up on his own. From my mind and from what I've seen from Washington, D.C., we have a lawless president in Barack Obama who has taken actions that do not pass the constitutional test. Jay Johnson himself doesn't uphold the laws of our land when it comes to securing our borders. And I think, Tony, every one of your listeners should worry that this administration could possibly not only seek to federalize these elections, but also be aiding and abetting what effectively is stealing an election to ensure the right outcome so that in their mind, Hillary Clinton wins the presidency.
So let's say they do make this declaration that our election system is a critical infrastructure, therefore gives the Department of Homeland Security jurisdiction of sorts over it. What could they do? What would that mean?
Well, what it could mean is that federal government officers would stand over basically each of the voting machines, and the federal government would be the one to do the counting of the ballots as opposed to the state and local government. They could be the ones that take jurisdiction over these electronic voting machines. After the election law called HAVA was passed, there are some voting machines now that do not have a paper ballot anymore. We don't have any backup. So if you have all of your election results on a digital source on a voting machine and you don't have any backup, and if someone hacks into that voting machine, they can adjust the numbers to say whatever they want to say. In fact, there was not very long ago an example of someone who did, in fact, hack into an American voting machine. It only took them 7 minutes to do it. So I think that it's important that we do have involvement, but the federal government cannot take over, run, supervise, and take over this voting system. Because at that point, I think we should be screaming from the housetops that the administration is trying to steal this election and put the fix in.
What could Congress do to prevent them from doing this?
Well, the most powerful tool we have is the Constitution. The Constitution prohibits the Department of Homeland Security, in other words, the federal government, from nationalizing these local and state elections. And what Congress could do is this. They could announce in no uncertain terms in a letter to the White House and to Jay Johnson that if the White House is thinking of nationalizing this upcoming election, Congress will seek impeachment. They'll seek impeachment of Jay Johnson. They'll seek impeachment of any federal officer that tries to implement this unconstitutional act. Congress should have done this on many of the unconstitutional actions that President Obama has taken. But this is their last chance to prove themselves, and I really believe this is what the Republicans need to do, make an announcement that we're on to you, Mr. President, we're not going to stand for it, and then actively put together a plan, including both Democrats and Republicans, to ensure that the ballot box is nonpartisan and remains, as the Constitution states, in charge by the local and state governments.
I think you're absolutely right. I think this is a nonpartisan issue or a bipartisan issue.
Absolutely.
And I think the American people would say, hey, if Congress is going to draw the line saying that, look, we're not going to have the federal government taking over the local election process, that Republicans and Democrats alike would support Congress, the Republicans, if they were to do that in the funding mechanism for Congress or for the government.
Absolutely. The people would stand by them on so many of these issues, Tony, if the Congress just would have had the will and the courage to stand up to the president's unconstitutional actions, the people would have their back. I don't think people fear this threatened shutdown of the government as much as members of Congress have been led to believe. I think the people will stand by them because we realize a lot has happened to destroy the United States in the last 7.5 years, and people want us to stand up at least for a safe election. Otherwise, why are we bothering to go through these primaries and this huge long process of electing a president only to have it undermined by having the president steal the election by having the federal government in an unprecedented first ever time of taking over the state and local duty of running elections? It would be unheard of.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us. And again, looking forward to seeing you at the Values Voter Summit.
It's going to be great. Thanks again, Tony, and to all your listeners as well.
To find out more about anything you've heard on today's program, go to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.